This is Digital Story Podcast number 623, February 20th, 2018. Today's theme is, should our cameras be as smart as our phones? I'm Derek Story. I've been thinking about how the camera industry could better combat the encroaching smartphone phenomenon that is eroding their market share. Should Nikon, Canon, Sony, Olympus, and Fuji tap computational photography for their devices? Or would another approach make more sense? I address this issue and much more on today's TDS podcast. I was up pretty early on Sunday morning for some photography, and it was very clear. The air here has been crystal clear, in part because we're in the middle of two systems sort of changing over. The breeze has been up and really sweeps the atmosphere quite a bit. On this particular morning, on Sunday morning, it was clear, but the breeze hadn't kicked up yet. And there was a lot going on out in the vineyards. This time of year, February, is when the mustard blooms in the vineyards, and it's absolutely gorgeous. It's this very bright yellow with a very green foliage. And if you get up early before the sun's too high, kind of at an angle, it's lovely to photograph. And especially this morning, not only was it clear, not only did we not have a whole lot of breeze, but then there were some clouds in the sky, and the lighting was changing all the time, and I was just going, oh man, I got to get out there. So I was up fairly early, out tromping around in this one vineyard that I had been eyeballing for some time, and I brought three cameras with me, an iPhone 10, a Pentax KP DSLR, and an Olympus Pen mirrorless. And the reason why I brought all three is because I'm working on an article where I talk about compact zoom lenses. And you'll see that article, it'll probably even be published by the time you hear this podcast or within 24 hours of that. And I wanted to shoot the same scenes with these different devices. Now, my intention wasn't to address this topic right now, which is smartphones and cameras and how can cameras fight back and all that kind of stuff. Really, my intention was to do the test that I set out to do, which is shoot a scene with a compact zoom lens, shoot a scene with the Pentax KP with its compact zoom lens, and then shoot a scene with the iPhone, you know, pinching or using the 2x zoom with it. And the thing that happened was very interesting. It was very unexpected for me. I mean, I was in some beautiful scenery. I mean, it was absolutely gorgeous. And the shots, I mean, I was just looking at them full screen on the iMac a few minutes ago, are lovely. They're just lovely. That's the only way you can put it. And I didn't use any polarizing filters or anything. They're just, you know, saturated and just very pretty. But while I was out there shooting these shots, I noticed that my best viewing experience was with the Pentax KP. And, you know, one of the reasons why, even though I shoot mirrorless a lot, and even though I love Olympus, one of the reasons why I still work with a DSLR is that there are certain situations where an optical viewfinder is just lovely. And this was one of those situations. As I look through that beautiful prism viewfinder, just nothing but optics showing me the world. The world was beautiful, and I was very inspired. It made me want to shoot more. And so I was having a blast. And so I'd shoot with the Pentax for a while, shoot. And then I go, okay, now I want to record some images from here with the pen. So then I'd pull out the pen, and it was a different viewing experience in that it was more like I was in a darkened theater, watching the scene before me on a screen. And I had this whole darkened theater to myself. So there was a little bit of detachment in the sense, it wasn't the same as the optical viewfinder that made me feel like I was standing right there in the field as I took the shots. This was a little bit like I was watching it on an HD device or something like that. Now the pen had the added benefit of real-time exposure compensation, which I love that about the mirrorless camera. So I could rotate the collar and increase exposure a half a stop, two-thirds of a stop, and I would get that feedback right there in my own little private theater, which was the electronic viewfinder. And I just think that's so very helpful. And sometimes what I'll do if I'm shooting with both types of cameras is that I'll shoot with the mirrorless first so that I can, you know, look at the scene through the electronic viewfinder, do my exposure compensation, and really figure out how I want it to look. And then when I shoot with the DSLR, if it was plus one or minus two-thirds, whatever, then I would just start with that setting on the DSLR, not having the real-time feedback for the exposure compensation. So I go back and forth. It really depends on the situation or my mood as much as anything, to be honest. Then I got to the iPhone X. And the reason why I also shoot with the iPhone X, I've talked about this a lot, is because it allows me to record the geotags for the scene. So I know exactly, you know, where I was, and I have it on a map. And then I get those headers in Photos for Mac OS. So it'll say, if I have one iPhone shot in there that's geotagged along with all the shots from the other cameras, then all those other shots, because the timestamps are in sync, also fall under that header. And I just think it's really helpful. Plus, if I wanted to do any posting to social right away, I could do that with the iPhone X without having to worry about even transferring images from either the Pentax or the Olympus. So I shoot with the iPhone X also. But I thought it was very interesting on this morning, as I held the screen up and composed the shots and everything, it wasn't nearly as inspiring as the other two cameras. I mean, I felt more like I was doing a duty. It's hard to explain. And when I mean a duty, I mean fulfilling a duty, not doing a duty. I felt more like I was fulfilling an obligation as I shot with the phones, like something that is part of my workflow and that I need to do, but it wasn't something that I wanted to do. Really, what I wanted to do was shoot with a DSLR most of the time and shoot with a mirrorless some of the time. And that's the mood that I was in for that particular morning. And it got me thinking, okay, so camera manufacturers are having to combat what's happening with smartphones. And I think they're making a lot of missteps and they're making some positive steps. But that experience that morning really helped crystallize in my mind some of the things that I think the camera industry should do to continue to secure its place in the world of photography. Now, you may be asking, well, why do I care about this? Well, there's a lot of reasons why I care about this. First of all, I have a vested interest in the camera industry, both as a hobbyist and as a professional. I want them to continue to innovate and to continue to create interesting cameras and come out with new lenses and all that sort of stuff. And I want the numbers to be high enough in terms of what people buy, the quantity that people buy, so that I can afford these new items. If the market shrinks so much and they're not selling nearly as many of these items, then the prices are going to go up. So that's one of my interests. The other is that this is something that I enjoy, not only individually, like I was Sunday morning, but also sharing this experience with other people through workshops, online, all that kind of stuff. If I were in a world of nothing but smartphone shooters, then that experience would not be nearly as rich and enjoyable for me. So I have a lot of reasons why I want the camera industry to hang in there and continue to secure their place in the world of photography. And I thought this might be interesting for you to think about too, because in your world, you are the person that people go to. You are the person that people ask advice of. You are also the person that can help influence other people, especially if you see an artist coming along the path using only a smartphone. You could be the person to help that person take the next step to an interchangeable lens camera and, you know, move their craft forward. So I think this is something that is a topic that, you know, all of us have a stake in. So here's the first thing. So here are my five things that I would like the camera industry to think about. And first of all, emphasize your strengths. For instance, you can create viewing experiences that just can't be matched on a smartphone. And, you know, those screens are great. The screen on my iPhone 10 is a fantastic screen. And when I'm indoors, it's absolutely beautiful. But it's because of the device itself and the way I have to hold it. And when I'm outside, especially, you know, reflected light and all that kind of stuff, it is not nearly as nice as looking through a viewfinder like I do on a DSLR or even a mirrorless camera. So this is one of the things that they can emphasize, which is the actual viewing experience at the time of capture to help you compose better, to be more inspired, to isolate your subject better, to really, you know, fall into the zone, so to speak. And I just don't think that that's talked about enough. And, you know, yes, we have LCDs on the back of our cameras. I have them on both my DSLR and my mirrorless cameras, and I can compose off those LCDs. And sometimes I want to, if I'm holding the camera up over my head or down real low or whatever. But when I'm outside shooting landscape on a beautiful day or travel photography or something like that, I want to look through the viewfinder because, you know, that's where it's at. That's where that luxurious experience is at. Next, continue to develop tempting lens options and possibly create more interchangeability among the brands. There's 2 points there, actually. First point, I think the camera industry is doing a great job with lens development right now. We have all sorts of optics, you know, appearing every year that are truly interesting. They're innovative. They're pushing the boundaries of physics. They look neat. You can go either direction. You can go retro with a manual focus optics made in Germany right now. You can go way forward with what's coming out of Japan right now. And, you know, other countries are getting in the act as well. I think this is something that they're actually doing really well, but they have to continue to do it. They have to continue to create interesting lenses that attract people and that are appealing to people doing a wide variety of things. So there should be lenses for fine artists, for event photographers, you know, for wedding photographers, on and on and on. Stuff that continues to make you look at that item and go, boy, I would like to save up and get that someday. The third one might be a little controversial, but I think it's important. And that is add a computational photography mode to our cameras to help those making the transition from smartphones to interchangeable lens devices. And I know there are scene detection modes now and all that kind of stuff. They've been around for a long time. But in my opinion, they pale in comparison to what a Samsung or a Google or an Apple top-of-the-line smartphone can do in terms of reading the scene and then producing an image that is postcard beautiful without the user having to do much of anything. Now, the reason why I think this is important to have on a camera, because as someone makes a transition from shooting smartphones only to a camera, this will be one less thing they have to think about during that transition. In other words, they can put it in computational photography mode, and the camera will behave more or less as their smartphone, but then they have the option of different lenses and a different viewing experience and a different physical experience with the camera. Then as they become more comfortable with those other differences, then they can begin to move into and explore and learn about the other modes, the program mode, aperture priority, shutter priority, and even full manual. But I think having that transition would be very helpful. Now, I understand that this is hard. This is probably the hardest thing on the list because Apple, Google, Samsung, and everyone else, they have a ton of engineers developing, you know, their version of computational photography. So that might be a situation where camera manufacturers have to start to partner with technology creators, much in the way that they started doing so with lenses. Sony, for example, partners with Zeiss on their lenses, and we see that with Panasonic and other brands as well. Maybe they have to start doing that a bit with the electronics also, not have so much ego involved, and be able to, hey, let's partner together and, you know, we'll make this. You get licensing fees, and we all move forward. So I do think a computational photography mode in cameras, in interchangeable lens cameras, will really help with this. And then there may be times when even you or I want to use that mode, because whatever is happening, we don't have much time. Family vacation is always what comes to my mind, where you have no time to shoot. All you have time to do is compose, and you don't have time to fiddle. And having that mode could be very helpful. But then you have the larger sensor, you have the great optics, and you have all the other goodies that we get. The fourth one, this is like a don't. Don't try to compete on the selfie level. Emphasize important life events such as travel, weddings, and art. Cameras that come out that have a selfie mode just drive me nuts, because I just feel like, look, there's no way that you are going to replace, you know, a smartphone for selfies. It's just not going to happen, right? And yes, we take selfies with our cameras, and we manage to make them work. But if we really want a good selfie, we use our smartphone. That's just the way that these things work. So forget about that. Forget about being distracted by that kind of stuff. You're never going to win that game anyway. But talk about, hey, you're going to go on a once-in-a-lifetime trip. Your daughter only gets married once, hopefully. You're an artist, and you want to create something that is exceptional. These are the sort of things that you need to be focusing on so that people understand, hey, I want to record that once-in-a-lifetime trip at a higher level. I want to have better images. I want to have more viewing and capture options than I do with my smartphone. Maybe I should get a camera for this, or for that. And that's the sort of thing that I think they have to continue to hammer on. Forget about selfies. Selfies are, that war is over. You lost it, okay? Smartphones have that. Emphasize the stuff that we are really good at using interchangeable lens cameras. And finally, continue to explore the design aesthetic. Smartphones are hampered in this area by the need to fit slimly in one's pocket or purse. Cameras have far more latitude with design, and that should be tapped. And we're seeing that with Fuji. We're seeing that with Olympus. You know, these cameras are absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, that's if you like the retro design, but there are other ways to go with this, the very modern design, or maybe something that we're not even thinking of at all right now. But that is a definite advantage. And one of the things that I really love about shooting with the cameras that I have, you know, the Pentax KP, the Olympus Pen, the OMD-E M1 Mark II, these cameras feel great. I love having them in my hands. I love shooting with them. And I think this is something that should be explored even more from camera manufacturers. So I think becoming smarter is only part of the answer. Computational photography, it's only one of the 5 points, and that's just a mode. That's just a selection on a dial. The camera has to have that, but it's these other things also that I think are going to continue to let interchangeable lens photography continue to flourish. We're starting to see a little bit of a bounce back now, especially in the mirrorless category, fighting back against the smartphone world. And I think, you know, that can continue if they continue to look at things like we're talking about today. If they do so, we benefit in so many ways. Not only do we get to use these devices I'm talking about, but they will be affordable, and photography will continue to flourish both online and in person. Speaking of hanging out with other photographers, I am now the moderator for the Skylum Photography Public Group. And Skylum, of course, is the company formerly known as MacFun. And I'm working with them now. I'm going to be doing a number of things for them, including moderating their public group, the Skylum Photography Public Group on Facebook. And I would love, to have as many of our Digital Story members over there as possible. Some of you were there already when I got there. Some of you have come over since I went over there. I've been working over there now almost a week. It'll be like a week tomorrow or something like that. And I would like more of you to come over. And the reason why, there's a couple reasons actually. One is that page is a lot different than our Digital Story Facebook page, in that, that page is, the Skyline page is really about you posting photos and then having a discussion around those images. And, you know, that's something that's pretty neat. And I would say that the level of photography is pretty good on the Skyline photography page. You know, there's some ups and downs there. There's some that are really great, and there are some that, you know, are more at the beginning of the curve. But the conversation around the images is something that I want to continue to evolve, in that I don't want, hey, great shot, be the only comment every time. And at the same time, I don't want people attacking people because they disagree on their approach for photography. So I want to have it where it is constructive and is informative and it's helpful, but I don't want it to be personal. And I think that's something that this audience can help the Skyline audience with, and I would love to have you guys, you know, come over and join me over there. And in fact, we have one thing going on right now. I just posted there today, which is a make me over kind of thing, where you would post a raw image in the comment for this make me over. And this is a post by me, so it should be easy to find. And then in a couple days, I think at the end of Wednesday, we'll pick one, and then I'll do a makeover on it using Luminar. And then, of course, you know, we'll talk about it, we'll share it, and I think it goes in the newsletter too. So it'd be a lot of fun. You guys are such great shooters. I'd love to see some of your files there. So hop over there. The link is in the show notes, or you can go on Facebook and just look for Skyline Photography Public Group, or you can search for it on Google. Most of you know how to do this, but if you want the link, it's there in the show notes. Now, you come over and then you ask to be approved for the public group. I can do that. If I see your name, then, you know, I'm probably going to approve you. I can't think of any of you that I wouldn't. And at the same time, though, it's really helpful. They ask you three questions. You know, what do you use Luminar? Do you use Aurora? And do you use other photography apps? Answer those questions. Because by answering them, then it's a lot easier for the moderator to approve you. I try to turn those around really quick, and then you're a member of the group and you can start participating. So I really look forward to seeing as many of you over there as possible. I just think that this public group can be a lot of fun. There's a lot of great shooters there right now. There's a lot of great people there right now. And I think adding more great people and more great shooters will make it even better. I posted an article about the San Francisco Street Photography Workshop on Sunday. And if you've been thinking about that workshop and need a little bit more information or a few more images from past workshops, hop over there. The link is in the show notes, and it still should be, you know, findable on the front page of the Digital Story. Come join me for the San Francisco Street Photography Workshop. I'm trying to close out that workshop right now so that I can, you know, do the final details with the Cartwright Hotel. You know, they need notice, and, you know, all the final arrangements have to be made. And the sooner that we can lock that up, the better off it will be in terms of the planning, the final plans for the workshop. We're going to have a great time. It's going to be Mike Baining and I. We have a great agenda set up. We have the Cartwright set up. You know, all the pieces are there. All we need to do is just, you know, fill out the last couple seats, and then off to the races we go. If you're thinking about doing this, joining us on April 26th, 27th, and 28th, please sign up now. And then that way we can finish this thing off and do the final plans, which I'm so excited about. So anyway, that article is on the Digital Story. Check it out if you're thinking about going. If you're teetering, read the article. All right. Hopefully that will help, right? Hopefully that will help. Hey, I had a really good time last Saturday doing our first Nimble class, our first Nimble online class of the season, Layers in Capture One Pro. We had a nice classroom. It was fun. And I used, you know, my new rig. I reconfigured so many things. I mean, I learned a lot after the first season, and I identified some areas where I feel like I could make improvements for my sake as much as anything, just to make the teaching experience more enjoyable for me. So I got to take it for a spin the other day. I was so happy to have this new season started. Again, you know, talking about Capture One Pro and layers and having some of you join me was a lot of fun. And I just started delivering the videos from that class today. Worked out a new little workflow for that, using some new tools for that. It's all very exciting. So we have another one coming up here very soon, and it's Build Your Digital Darkroom with Photos, and it's coming up on March. I have the link in the show notes, so you might want to check it out. And the reason why, if you use Photos at all, or if you're in the Apple ecosystem at all, the reason why I would encourage you to think about this class is I'm really going to be working with some of the top editing extensions, you know, such as Luminar, such as DxO, such as Raw Power. You know, these things are amazing. They're really incredible. And the workflow that you can build using these tools that are very affordable, you sort of get your cake and eat it too, because the Photos ecosystem, you know, spreads across all of your devices, whether they're computers or mobile devices. So your images are everywhere. They're automatically archived. You know, it's just so wonderful. And one of the things that I really like about it is that I'm on the go a lot, and I'm now making sure, even if I didn't use Photos as my primary photo processing, let's say that it was a more of a commercial shoot and I processed in Capture One Pro, I make sure that, you know, I take 10 or 12 of the best shots from that and bring them into Photos also, because I always have those images with me. That library is always with me. And I have found time and time again, I'm really disappointed if I want to pull up a shot and I go, it's in that library that's back on a hard drive back at the studio instead of on my smartphone or instead of on the computer that's with me. Now, the thing about this is that it's not only that convenience, that cloud convenience, but the workflow can be incredibly sophisticated, fun, and easy. And that's what this workshop's about, building your digital darkroom with Photos using these cool apps such as Luminar and Raw Power, and really seeing, wow, this is really neat. I can do a lot of stuff very affordably, have a blast doing it. So if you're interested in that at all, if you're an Apple ecosystem photographer at all, I encourage you to take a look at the course description. You can either go to thenimblephotographer.com and just click on Classroom, or you can use the show notes, and there's a link there that'll take you directly over. Or you can go to the workshops page on the Digital Story, and down at the bottom I have a link to the Nimble Classroom. Either way, go over there and take a look and see what you think. I'd love to have you in class in March. It's on March 10th, a Saturday, March 10th. And let me show you some of this stuff. I think you'll be very, very impressed and hopefully highly motivated afterwards. I want to give a shout out to my friends over at Red River Paper, who keep me motivated in the world of inkjet printing. They have everything I need. They have the paper, they have the ink, they have the tutorials, they have the reviews. One-stop shopping for people who love printing, and I happen to be one of those people. We have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can click there and go over there, and we usually have a special offer running. And they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Big thanks to them for supporting this show. And speaking of folks who stand behind the show, I also want to tip my hat to our Patreon members, those who are part of our inner circle. I'm working on some new stuff for you guys and gals. I'll tell you, start getting near the end of the month. That's when you start finding out, okay, what's going to be posted at the first of the next month, and, you know, what new goodies do I get? If you're interested in becoming a supporter of this, not only this podcast, but this whole endeavor, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Support the show, support our effort, support photography. I really appreciate it. And those that have been with me from the very start, I totally appreciate your commitment. And finally, I'm going to mention that, boy, the details for the Sonoma County Hot Air Balloon and Drone Photography Workshop coming up this June 8th through 10th. Those details are coming together fast, and I cannot wait to send out the reservation forms to those on a reserve list. More to come on that, but I have to tell you, this is going to be a crazy workshop. So if you like hot air balloons and if you're curious about drones, this is for you. This is for you. That's all I have to say. More to come on that. But you might want to get on the reserve list. If I've piqued your curiosity, then that way you'll be part of the first wave who can sign up. All righty. That's going to do it for me this week. You know, it was really interesting on Sunday morning when I was out there. I really was loving being a photographer on Sunday morning. And I was very happy to be able to have the tools that I have. And it just made me thankful and at the same time wanting to fight for this industry and wanting to fight for our craft. And hopefully a little bit of each came through in today's show. Working on stuff for next week. Make sure you come back and join me. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.